We will now move into or on to the Finance Committee, so I'm passing the gavel to myself at this moment. Commissioner Brown is not here today. He's our Finance Chair. The first order of business is the approval of the minutes from the previous committee meeting, which have already been distributed. Is there a motion for approval?
So moved.
Okay, moved by Duggan, second by Bivens. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Committee item number one, update on TPWD, progress in implementing TPWD, land and water resource conservation and recreation plan. Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate it. Just a couple things I want to note. Obviously, we are halfway through the session, and obviously there's a lot going on, and if some of us look like we hadn't got much sleep, there's probably a good reason for it. In your presence, I want to make sure that you understand the work and leadership that Gene McCarty in particular and Harold Stone are doing on behalf of the agency right now. And they are having to essentially manage all of the machinations of trying to get a $400 million plus budget through, track and monitor 400 bills, manage the sunset hearing process, and coordinate all of staff participation in hearings that happen almost every day. So it literally is a Herculean effort to coordinate all of that, and I just want you to know how hard they and many others are working on behalf of the entire agency, and so I want y'all to know that. We have passed out a sheet that shows basically where we stand in the appropriations process. We expect both the Senate and House to pass out appropriations bills sometime in the next week. They continue to work on a host of things. I'm not going to go through this sheet. It changes almost daily in terms of our exceptional item requests and what's being considered and what's not. But suffice to say, if you have any questions about it, please let me know. But I do think we're making some significant headway in certain areas. Obviously, as y'all are acutely aware, we are going through the sunset process. Both bills have been filed. Sponsored in the Senate by Senator Hager and on the House by Representative Harper Brown. We just had our Senate committee hearing on the sunset bill 2 days ago, and that went remarkably expeditiously. I think it lasted for 3.5 minutes, so we were pleased about the efficiency of that. And we expect a hearing on the House side next week in cultural, recreation, and tourism under Chairman Homer. So, a lot going on the legislative front, and if y'all have any questions about specific things, let me or Gene know. So, with that, I'll turn it back over to you, Chairman, as I know we're trying to move forward.
Sure, thank you. Committee item number two, our financial overview. Mary is gone, so we've completely changed this financial structure. Mr. Gene McCarty, please make your presentation.
We haven't changed it at all.
Well, I guess maybe some of the people doing it right now. You and I. Huh?
You and I.
Yeah, that's right.
It's no longer Chairman Brown and Mary Fields.
No, that's right. So are we interims? Is that what we are?
Acting.
Acting. Oh, acting. Okay. Acting. I get confused on this interim and acting.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners. My name is Gene McCarty. I'm Deputy Executive Director for administration and acting chief financial officer. What we have before you today is our standard financial overview focusing on the current revenue and budget structures of for fiscal year 2009. To get started, let's start with park receipts. When comparing the receipts through January 31st at $11.26 million, we are down 0.8% or $95,000 under last year's collection at this same time. You may think this is not good news, but this really is when you take into consideration that these comparables here of $11.35 million against $11.26 million are really not apples and apples. We lost a considerable amount of revenue when we lost Galveston Island State Park and Sea Rim and the Battleship for a period of time. When you take those out of the equation, really you're looking at park park receipts at all the other parks being up 3.8% instead of down 0.8. So that's really kind of good news for state parks. Moving on to boat revenue, as of January 31st, we were $4.4 million. This is 12.1% down, or almost $603,000 compared to last year at this time. Again, this is a lot like hunting and fishing licenses. We're down, but we're making moves every month. We're improving. If you'll remember, the last time this was presented, it was about at 15% down. So we're making some moves. We're about 12% down. And if you look at the actual data, the data to date, we're only about 9.6% down today. So we're continuing to make improvements in our revenue stream on boat revenue, and I think that will continue to improve over the spring. So by the end of the year, you know, we're hoping to be looking at a lot better picture than we're looking at right now. When you look at license sales revenue, at $66.4 million, or being 3.4% down, or $2.4 million as compared to last year at this time. All categories of revenue, when compared against 2008, are down except for resident hunting. But in the same way as boat registration and titling is improving as time goes by, this license sales are also improving. If you remember, back when we last presented this to you, we were about 9% down. We're now 3.4% down as of January 31st. And actually, as of today, we're only about 2.9% down. So we continue to improve as time goes by, and hoping that we have a good weather condition through the spring, and that our fishing license sales recover to a level that our hunting license performed at, and we should be okay.
Is that a norm, Gene, that, you know, as you start for it's, both boating and for your fishing, as it gets closer to the quote-unquote season, that it gets?
It's a norm for it's normal for. For, of course, we have a secondary peak in the spring for fishing license sales.
Yeah. Okay.
The trend that we're seeing is kind of a norm for a hurricane year. The trend we're seeing here is almost the same trend that we saw in Rita and Katrina. Mm-hmm. We lost a lot of revenue early in September and October, but we regained most of that revenue in the March, April, May time. Okay. So it's we're hoping that to be on the same kind of trend that we were with Rita and Katrina, and we get people coming back. Looking at total license sales, when compared to our FY09, look at total license sales. At the end of January, we sold a total of 2.08 million licenses, which is down about 1.2% compared to last year. Total hunting license sales was up 1.3, but total fishing license sales are down 9.6, and the combos are basically flat at 0.4% down.
Hurricane,
primarily hurricane. I mean, you're really looking at our hunting licenses were real slow in coming on. We had a bad October. And then November, they just came on.
I'll be done.
And so we're hoping to see that same kind of trend in fishing. I mean, we lost a lot of fishing licenses, license sales in the area. There was some areas down along the coast that license sales were 75% down in that area.
Yeah, Carter, from Apple, that's where people are buying. I mean, that's where they buy the licenses. I mean, that's where your concentration of fishing. Yeah. Okay.
Can we stop there and leave the mic?
Not a whole lot. We don't sell a lot of lifetime licenses. I mean, I think we sell a few hundred a year.
You know, I don't know if it's a big problem, but I get a lot of complaints that hunters go into some of the different areas that sell the license, and the person doesn't know how to run the machine. So
we do have that problem. I mean, our license deputies are contract deputies, and of course we... We do a lot of training with them, but they also, you know, they're Walmart clerks that aren't paid a lot, and there's a lot of turnover. So we do have that problem with the, and that problem is really a real issue for us at the early time of the year when we get long lines and we got a clerk that's not well trained and is slowing the process down. It's getting better, and certain vendors are performing better than others. I mean, I'd have to say, you know, the Academy is doing a great job.
That's what I always tell them.
Yeah.
but to your point, I raised that issue with you a few months ago when I went out to get them in Fort Worth, and I would like to see us take a redouble our efforts to sell them over the web page.
Yes, sir.
Where we have a link that when somebody comes onto the web page, it essentially markets. I just think we can market a lot of our stuff better than we're doing. No criticisms. I'm just saying we ought to look at that. And that's such a bargain for people and a lifetime of commitment to this mission if we can get people to do that.
Yes, sir. Based on our conversations, we're developing a whole plan for that and also for law enforcement offices.
Great.
Kate, you want to say something about how lifetime license fees are managed and endowments and corpus is kept intact? We only get to use the interest.
Yeah, one of the issues about the lifetime license is it doesn't come into our revenue stream. It goes into an endowment. And up to this point, we've not that endowment revenue has not been part of our revenue stream. We're trying to work with the legislature right now to make a method of finance switch so that it does become part of our revenue stream and help and begins to start funding some of the initiatives in the agency.
So where does the money? When can the money be used, or where does it go? Or?
Well, right now it just rolls over into it's just rolling and compounding, and so it's
no
that
access
that,
to it.
Well, we're asking for access to it through the appropriations process. And you have to go through the appropriations process to get access to it. And so we're asking for that this year.
I have no idea.
Why would a lifetime fee be any different from a normal license fee?
Well, it's principally because you're taking revenue out of the revenue stream. Because
future
that person,
revenue.
That future revenue out of the revenue stream, and so the idea was to create a mechanism by which you could get that long term revenue back into the revenue stream through building an endowment.
Mm-hmm. Why not amortize it over the life of the estimated life?
In my case, my father gives it all to his grandkids when they're born. So, I mean, you know, and then you got some that buy it at 70 years old. So I guess you could statistically come up with some average.
If you could, just put
yeah.
it in.
Well,
I just think we ought to get the money.
Naturally.
It really has to do with the appropriations process and how you get money appropriated to you.
Yeah, it has to be appropriated every 2 years anyway.
And they will not, and one legislative session will not bind future legislation. So it's very difficult to get those kind of long-term revenue streams set up like that. When comparing our FY09 revenue collections as of January 31st to the annual revenue estimates, we're doing pretty well, despite being down in most of our revenue sources. With 42% of the year has elapsed, and we've collected about 61.5% of our Fund 9, about 41% of our state parks revenue, about 35% of our local park fund, and 87% of our others category. That others category is driven by a couple of fairly large donations that have come into the agency, principally a shrimp license buyback and the donation for the construction of the Game Warden Academy. Our overall budget for the agency has increased by $16.5 million since our last commission meeting in November, taking our budget to $462.8 million. Budget adjustments were made during the months of December and January are summarized on this slide. The largest adjustment relates to federal grants. That's principally the grant section there in $13.4 million. Those grants are pass-through grants to Travis County for a Grandview Hills acquisition of Balcones Canyonland Preserve, and that was almost $11 million. Again, the donation section is driven by shrimp license buyback, and the interagency contracts are a couple of contracts for border security and TCEQ. With 58% of the fiscal year remaining, we have about 61.2% of our budget remaining. All categories other than operating equipment are basically on track. Operating is a little bit ahead, but we buy a lot of our materials and so forth in up front. We also pay a lot of our rents and our services up front, so this is not unexpected. And then capital expenditures are running a little behind, but that's also normal for us, just from the standpoint of the amount of time it takes to carry a capital construction project to fruition. So I don't see anything unusual in terms of our budget versus expenditures. With that, I'll take any questions that you may have.
Any questions? Well, that would be nice too, Gene.
Yeah, they are. They're taking pity on me. So
yeah, all right. Okay, why don't we move on then. Committee item number 3, license and boat registration fee. Gene, you're up again. Well, somebody's up again. Libby, you're up on this one?
I'm going to help him out.
There you go.
I got my sidekick.
There you go.
We really miss Larry, don't we?
I pulled in the troops for support.
Okay.
For the record, my name is Gene McCarty. I'm Deputy Executive Director for Administration. I have with me today Lydia Saldana, Director of Communications. She's going to help me talk a little bit about some of the survey data that we've got concerning the acceptance of a fee increase, and she's also going to help talk a little bit about a couple of our new very exciting revenue generating projects that we may be proposing. So what we're here today to talk about is a proposed increase in license and boat registration fees. Just to give you a little background, Texas Parks and Wildlife has a long history of, I guess, having long periods of time between fee increases. Our last fee increase for Parks and Wildlife was done in 2004. Prior to that, it was done in 1996. We have a tendency to wait long periods of time, and we have a tendency to make fairly large fee increases. The fee increase in 2004 was approximately 17%, and the fee increase in 1996 was approximately 30%. That creates a bit of a problem for the agency. We get into this fast and famine kind of, or a feast and famine kind of situation where we get revenue, and then we, for a long period of time, we absorb a number of increases in operating costs, which puts us in a situation where we're needing money again. And in fact, since 2004, operational costs of the agency have increased to 6.1% per year, which brings us to the point where we're back in a situation where we need a fee increase to continue to be able to provide the level of services that we provide to the hunters and fishermen and boaters of Texas. For just to give you a little background on fee increases that are going on other places in the United States, seven states have recently increased fees in the last 2 years. That's Alabama, Alaska, Arizona, Colorado, Florida, Minnesota, and Montana, and their fee ranges range from 20% to 60%. Two states are currently proposing fee increases for 2010, which is the same time that we would be proposing this fee increase, and that's Idaho and Oregon, and you can see their fee increases are proposed at 15% and 20%. I'm told that they're based on public public comment, some other things, they may be reconsidering that level of fee increase and maybe ratcheting that down a little bit. Let me give you a little bit of an update of what we've done since 2004 and how we've used the funds that we've gotten. As one of our major focuses at the chairman's direction has been the increase in hunting opportunity in both public and private lands. The popular private lands leasing program has expanded since 2004 and provided additional opportunities for big game hunting, game birds, and small game. The dove lease program, which is immensely popular with hunters, has grown to more than 140 units. And more than 70% of these opportunities are close to major metropolitan areas of the state. Another key focus has been assisting landowners with technical guidance. And since 2004, we've grown to 22 million acres under wildlife management plan. We've graduated 162 game wardens from the Game Warden Academy, and we have another 50 wardens another 50 cadets being trained there right now. The 50 cadets that are in the academy right now today will be the first to graduate from our new Game Warden Training Center in Hamilton County, and which we're going to be breaking ground on next month. We've stepped up our efforts in boating safety, including an outreach campaign called Nobody's Waterproof. On the fishery side, since 2004, both inland fisheries and coastal fisheries have stocked over 186 million fingerlings into Texas waters. And we've also brought fishing closer to the urban areas by developing neighborhood fishing program. This provides fishing opportunities close to home for Texans all over the state. And as you all know, we've also broken ground on a new fish hatchery in East Texas, in Jasper County. On the coastal front, we continue to grow our artificial reef program. Since 2004, we've added 20 sites, and that's brought with it an additional $4 million in donations to support those sites. Progress also continues on implementation of the seagrass conservation plan. The commission established regulations, and we continue to evaluate their conservation effectiveness. As you heard from Carter earlier, the abandoned crab trap program continues to be effective, and since 2004, we've collected 12,000 additional abandoned crab traps in coastal waters. So the question is, What do we need this money for? What are we going to do with this money? And I think the real issue is that we need this to address growing demands for such things as I originally discussed in terms of inflation and increased expenses. We have aging infrastructure all over the state. We have an increased demand for aquatic vegetation control, increasing demands for wildlife technical guidance to private landowners, increased demand for public hunting opportunities, providing fishing opportunities in urban areas, and as you heard in a presentation earlier, we need to address recruitment and retention challenges in our fisheries and wildlife professional positions. So what are we proposing? We're discussing or we're asking to propose what we call a 5% roll-up plan, which is basically increase of licenses 5% rolled up to the next highest dollar. What this really equates to is approximately a $2 to $5 increase for most of our popular recreational licenses. It's more than that on a certain number of licenses, and those are some of our very high dollar licenses that are mostly associated with commercial operations. I mean, you know that many of our commercial licenses are $1,000, and so a 5% roll up on that is certainly more than $2 to $5. But for the vast majority of the licenses that we sell, the recreational licenses that we sell, it's less than $5 in terms of the total cost to the individual. When you apply this 5% roll up across all our licenses, it actually ends up being a 7.1% total increase in the price, in the total amount of revenue. And this proposal would bring in about $3.6 million a year of additional revenue. This kind of gives you an example of how that applies across our most popular license packages. Our Super Combo is currently $64. It would go to $68. That's a $4 increase. Our Resident Hunting License is $23. It would go to $25. That's a $2 increase. Our Resident Freshwater Fishing License is $28. It would go to $30. That's a $2 increase. And our Resident Saltwater Fishing License is $33. It would go to $35. That's a $2 increase. Our licenses that are the cheapest license, which is our senior license and our youth license, both of which are currently $6, would just go up $1, go up to $7. Moving on to boat registration and titling. Kind of similarly, we did our last boat registration titling increase in 2004. I want to remind you that boat registration is for a two-year period. So when you register your boat, it's not like you have to register it every year. It's every 2 years. So for what you're getting is, for the cost you're getting is 2 years worth of value. These increased costs are associated, or the increased revenue would be associated with improvements and updates to our boat registration system. In fact, we just 12 days ago opened up online registration for vessels, which is a really, really good thing. In that 12-day period, we've registered about 506 vessels online, and about 24,000 dollars in revenue. We have increased costs associated with boat theft enforcement, boating fuel costs for game wardens, and as our lakes and waterways become more and more crowded, we have more and more issues and concerns about boating safety and BWI enforcement. Again, we would propose what we call a 5% roll up to the next highest dollar. I have two exceptions to that rule, and those are trying to get our licenses a little more commensurate with the value of the vessel, and I'll go through that in just a minute. The additional revenue generated by this 5% roll up would be about $1.7 million. Just kind of going through what this means to the average boat owner. If you own a vessel that's less than 16 feet, you're currently paying $30. You will be paying, we propose, $32. Remember, that's 2 years, so that's $16 a year for boat registration. Boat registration on a 16 to 18 foot vessel is currently $50. It'd go to $53. Again, that's 2 year registration. That's $26.50 per year. Just from my personal experience, I own an 18 foot boat, and I pay $50 a year for the trailer the boat sits on for trailer registration. So
$50 a year.
Yeah, a year.
Yeah, this is $53 for 2 years. Well, you want to raise it to $53 for 2 years.
Yeah. So the actual registration of the vessel, which is what I really have it for. Is half of what it costs just to drag it down the highway. Boat registration, and these are the exceptions here. Boat registration for vessels 26 to 40 feet in length, which is currently $70, we would propose to go to 110. Obviously, that's way over 5%, but we're trying to get that a little bit more commensurate with the value of the vessel, and also looking at some things that are going on in some other states. It's on the high end of what's going on in other states, but it's within the range of what's going on in other states. And boat registration for vessels over 40, which is currently 90, would go to 200. Titles are currently $25, would go to $27, and that's still considerably cheaper than a vehicle title with TxDOT.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes, sir.
What number of, in terms of numbers of boats registered, would you not agree that the vast majority fall in the 16 to 26 foot range?
Absolutely. 16 to 20 foot is about 180,000. Is the average
number of registrations?
Right, and then the less than 16 is about 107,000.
And when we have fishermen and fish ladies who fish from out of state who come to tournaments, do they have to register their boat for the?
No, sir. If they've got a valid registration in another state, they can put the vessel.
We don't have any kind of temporary tag.
No, sir. As long as their registration is valid and proper registration in another state, it's okay.
That's true, vice versa.
Yes,
are we honored if we go to Florida or something?
Yes, sir. Let me. We have a number of other additional revenue opportunities we'd like to talk about. One of them that came forward from law enforcement is to implement an administrative fee of $100 for reinstatement of revoked licenses. TxDOT does this in terms of your driver's license. If your driver's license is ever revoked, that you have a fairly significant charge to get your driver's license reinstated. When we revoke an individual's license of any type, whether it be a commercial fishing license or whether it be a recreational fishing license, we would like to implement a fee to allow that individual to reinstate the license. So that's one of the additional new possible revenue generating potentials there. And I'm going to turn it over to Lydia at this point to talk a little bit about another opportunity.
Thank you, Gene. I want to talk to you about an idea we'd like to implement this year. It's an annual lifetime license drawing. And I want to point out that Carter brought this idea to us from the Texas Freshwater Fishery Center last year. When Carter first started, he made the rounds of town meetings. And this was an idea that came up from a maintenance specialist at the Texas Freshwater Fishery Center, had this idea, and Carter came back just on fire. We got to look into this and really see if it'll work. So there's been a team of folks that have been looking at all of the license fee structure, and this was one of the ideas that we've tossed around. This is where we are right now with the idea. I'm going to present to you what it's our kind of best idea of what we can do this year. The idea is that there would be an annual lifetime license drawing, and it would be an opportunity for 10 folks to win lifetime licenses. The entry fee would be $5, and we'd begin the sales push with the licenses that go on sale on August 15th. The marketing message would be throw your name in the hat and enter the lifetime license drawing for a chance to hunt and fish forever for free. There would be no limit on the number of entries that anybody could buy, and it could be transferred to a friend or family member within 30 days of winning. The target customer is going to be similar to what our target customer is for the Big Time Texas Hunts, which is our super combo customer, our combination folks that have a combination license. And we think this will be pretty successful. I think, like Big Time Texas Hunts, we'll probably start slow. When we began that program back in 1996, I think we had about 6,000 entries, but it has steadily grown over time. We would have a big promotional push around the time licenses go on sale. So, again, that would create some excitement about licenses being on sale. We would do another push in the springtime to get anglers, and then we would draw it on August 1st of next year. That way we would have a chance to inform those folks who won before they have to buy their next year's license, and would also create some excitement for the next promotional year and for licenses in general. So that's kind of where we are on that. We will market it in all the ways that we possibly can, with an emphasis on internet marketing. Certainly we have all of our communication vehicles that we would use, but I think this will generate a lot of excitement, and I think that we could, I think we'll do some good with it. There were a lot of ideas on the table. The folks involved in this team are all very creative folks, and we tossed around every imaginable iteration of this. But one of the things that we came down to is we want to keep the message real simple. and keep the first-year promotion pretty simple as we get word out about it. And as we go forward, we might try some twists or tweaks on it, but we thought this year, keep it simple, a very simple message, and launch it in a big way with the sale of licenses this year.
Yeah. Would you be promoting this at every point of sale?
Yes.
And then there's 10, you said there was going to be 10 available.
Correct. And that number is rather arbitrary. I mean, we tossed around several numbers. One thing that we kind of harkened back to was during the big time Texas hunts several years ago, we went from offering, and if Linda's in the room, she can help me on this, but I think we went from offering 10 hunts of the whitetail hunt to 20. And we didn't see that big of a jump in revenue. So we kind of took that learning, and we just thought we would start with 10 and kind of see where we go. We also have to keep in mind, obviously, that we pull these folks out of our revenue stream, so we want to think about that as well. And I think 10 is a good number. I think it's going to generate some excitement. So that's where we would recommend starting.
So would you have a drawing here in Austin? Or?
It would be just like we draw big-time Texas hunts. Yeah. I mean, just computerized drawing. And then obviously make a huge deal about those winners. You know.
Yeah.
So. Any other questions about that?
Any estimates? How much money you can raise?
Well, that is, it's a guess. We think that the only other state doing it is Washington, and they're getting about a 0.7 return. We think we could get about a 1% return on our target audience. So that would be less than $100,000. But that's kind of where we started with the Big Time Texas Hunts program. We started with our first year at less than $100,000, and now we're bringing in close to $800,000 in revenue. So, yeah, I think we can do a better job of marketing than Washington. So, I want to go through some survey data as well. We'd like to share some of the data with you about how Texans feel about the job we're doing and how they feel about a potential fee increase. Somebody earlier this morning referenced the same HUD, the same study. In 2001, we contracted, it was a Texas Tech study, and we contracted with Mark Duda from Responsive Management, a very well-respected, well-known surveyor. And in this comprehensive statewide survey, and again, this is back in 2001, over 90% of those polled were either very satisfied or somewhat satisfied with Parks and Wildlife. In addition, at that time, and nearly half of those polls supported an increase in license fees to increase conservation funding for Parks and Wildlife. Now, more recently, in 2006, Texas A&M did a study. This was anglers, and it showed that support for Parks and Wildlife continues to be very, very strong among the, in this case, among hunters and anglers. This survey showed that of all licensed anglers, 89% of licensed resident anglers were moderately to extremely satisfied with the job done by Parks and Wildlife, and that number increased to 91% for saltwater anglers. Now, it's probably never a great time to propose a fee increase, but certainly in this economy, we are very concerned about the impact of a proposed increase. We really thought long and hard and talked about this a long time. So we wanted to make sure to get a pulse on this before going too much further down the road. Just last month, as some of you may know, the Texas Coalition for Conservation commissioned a poll to ask Texans about the sporting goods sales tax, and they also added a few additional questions to get a pulse of how folks felt about a potential hunting and fishing license increase. The results showed, in my view, it was surprisingly strong support. And the support increases when the situation is explained. 59% of those polled supported a hunting and fishing license fee increase to finance conservation. When they were then told that we hadn't had an increase since 2004, support increased to 63%. And then support increased to 72% when informed that the increases will be less than $5. Again, I think that it underscores the importance of communicating the different things that we're talking about here, that it's a relatively small increase and that we haven't had an increase in a while and that what the money goes to support. So certainly this information will be very mindful of it as we put together a communication plan. And we're requesting permission to publish these proposed changes in the Texas Register for Public Comment. We'll be happy to take any questions. Gene will be happy to take your questions.
Yes, sir.
No mention of increasing the lifetime license fee.
we've got a little thing going on right now with the legislature that we're working on, and we're hoping that will pan out where the legislature actually does a statutory increase. The way fees are worked in Texas is that the fee is delegated to the commission. The ability to set a fee is delegated to the commission with a statutory floor. So right now, the statutory floor on the lifetime is $300. And we're talking with members of the legislature to make that statutory floor higher, even higher than what we currently have the license at. And there it's a bit of a trade for something that they want, but I think it will work out.
Well, you're proposing to go to $68 for a combo, super combo.
The actuarials on that go down. I mean, they're already bad. Just to tell you the truth, they're already bad. If we don't increase the lifetime, they will get worse.
But you had asked about the super combo?
No.
Oh, well, okay, sorry, I was just looking at the actual, I mean, looking at the, if you extrapolate out $68
yeah.
over a lifetime.
Actuarials on the lifetime right now are not where we want them to be. And we do want to increase it, but right now I'm trying to work through this legislative fix, and if that doesn't work, then we'll be back.
But is there a way to tee that up for the May meeting in case it doesn't happen, so that if the commission were to
absolutely, yes, sir. And I would
yes, we do that.
I would that would be fine with us. We would like that.
How many do you sell in a year?
Lifetime.
If I've got it on the list yet, I don't have it on this list.
We don't push them very strongly because of these. Yeah.
Well, I'm not looking at an exact number, but I thought you indicated it was in
not
the
many.
It's only in the hundreds. I don't know the exact number.
I'm not saying we shouldn't do it, but I'm just trying to indicate to you that we're not talking about big dollars.
It was on our list. It was on our
list. I remember.
And we didn't. We're working with the legislature right now. We didn't pursue it, but I would like to keep it on the list. Now, the issue is right now it's $600. It's $600 for a hunting or fishing, and it's $1,000 for the combo. To get your actuarials where you want them, you really need to be talking about the individuals being approximately $1,000 and the combination being about $1,800. That was our original proposal, but that's a pretty big jump. But that's where you really need your actuarials to be on that lifetime.
That's where it needs to be. That's where it needs to be.
And I
know there aren't very many of them sold, but I also think we don't market them at all.
Yeah.
I don't disagree. Your issue is it's an endowment dollar, and it doesn't. We don't get the money. I mean, it's a way to look at it. Sorry to say it that way, but it's true.
You're right.
We have absolutely no problem with adding that to this proposal for the purpose of getting public comment, and I appreciate that very much.
Sure. Yeah, that's a good point. I think we should. Also, we just need, you know, the problem is the jump is so large, we want to be really sensitive. So relative to the economy we're in right now.
So. I didn't realize that we didn't get the money.
Well, if we don't get it now, but we're asking through legislative process to be able to utilize that in our revenue stream, at least be able to utilize the interest earnings off of that endowment.
Offsetting deficit of that.
Yes, sir.
Any other questions on this? Definitely need to go out and get public with this thing and talk about it. We'll have some sensitivity to it. We'll be very sensitive to the citizens of the state of Texas. At the same time, this is the right thing to do. Just unfortunate that the timing hit in an economic downturn.
And the proposed increases are very modest.
No, and we're trying to be very and we're trying to be very fair about this, and then try to get eventually some kind of process in place where it's done on a more regular basis. Because you saw before 2004, and I was here for 2004. It was 1996, been 8 years. I mean, it went way too long there. So we're doing a little better, but
It is a very modest proposal at 5% rolled
right.
up, and that, like I said, that ends up being about 7.1% across the board. But for those more expensive licenses, as I talked to, there's a lot of more expensive licenses out there that are mostly commercial licenses. It's just 5% because they're so large that there's not a roll up.
Right.
And so it truly is just 5% because, I mean, there are. We do have a license out there, which we've had action on in the last year, like the Menhaden boat license, which is a $4,000 license. So, you know, 5% on $4,000 is a couple hundred dollars. But at the same time, there's only 12 of those licenses sold, so it doesn't mean a lot in revenue.
Okay. Another question? Great. Then I will authorize staff to publish this item in the Texas Register for the required public comment period. And I assume we'll be bringing it back in May to...
Yes, sir. We'll bring it back
okay.
in May. We will have public hearings between now and then.
Good.
And we will have a lot of news.
And you'll do those on a statewide basis.
Yes, sir.
This obviously affects all our citizens, okay, and all our constituents. Great.
Committee
item number 4, audit reports. Mr. Scott Boroff and Mr. Carlos Contreras, please come up. Gene, thank you. Thank you, Biddy.
Chairman, Commissioners, Director Smith, my name is Scott Boroff, Deputy Executive Director of Operations. I'm here today to give you what I hope is the swan song in terms of our reporting on the state auditor's report on state parks. We are, for all practical purposes, completed with that project, but I did want to give you a very brief update, and realizing how late in the day we're getting, I will focus on the brief part of that. As most of you know, rolling into the 80th legislative session, the session before this current session, the agency had made some significant requests of the legislature for additional funding for state parks. As you will recall, we had partially closed 52 of our state parks preceding that legislative session. And when I say partially closed, I mean limiting the hours and reducing some of the operations at almost half of the parks that we had at that current time. So state parks and Fund 64 were in bad shape in terms of the funding available to run the parks. The base budget then was about $57 million in operating for state parks, and we made about a request for an additional 40%, another $23 million in funding for operations. We made bigger requests than that, but I'm talking about for operations in state parks. So it was a significant request, and rolling into the session, the legislature directed the state auditor's office to come out and take a look at the appropriateness and reasonableness of those requests. So in December of 06, just before the beginning of the session, the state auditors came out, began their audit of our state parks system, and they stayed here for about 3 months through around February of 07 after the start of the last session. And then in March, middle March, issued their report containing 48 specific recommendations for state parks. Those recommendations were broken into four main categories, which I'm going to share with you a little later. They were in terms of visitation and reporting, park management, capital repairs, and fiscal controls. Those were the four major areas that they looked at. I will say that our immediate response when we got the audit was to the then executive director, Bob Cook, and Chairman Fitzsimmons asked me to make sure that this project rolled out appropriately, and then we had appropriate response. So we had executive office oversight from day one. We immediately went out and developed a cross-divisional team where we pulled in all the divisions that had anything to do with this, primarily state parks, of course, administrative resources relative to the fiscal controls, information technology, and infrastructure who had to do with the capital projects. We put together a very robust team within the agency, which included folks from here in Austin, but also from the field. Obviously, this is an important field exercise. We immediately created a new shop in administrative resources headed up by Kim Dudish of about 10 folks, I believe, to put together an oversight group in administrative resources to help us develop appropriate fiscal controls and make sure those things rolled out appropriately in the field. Per the direction of the legislature, we hired 16 auditors under the direction of Mr. Contreras, who's up here with me. Mr. Contreras came on board and began hiring those 16 auditors. And then ultimately, we also hired four fiscal control specialists in the State Parks Division to go out and help prepare the state parks for future fiscal control audits, which Mr. Contreras is going to talk about in more detail later. In order to keep this short, I'm not going to necessarily run down each of these bullets. I'd be glad to respond to any of these, but I wanted to give you just a real brief overview. Under visitation and reporting, we had several recommendations. Most of that had to do with standardizing our fiscal control processes and other planning processes. We had a lot of different methods and procedural models out in the field, so there was confusion when you went out there about how we counted visitors and how we accounted for the revenue that came into the parks. So a lot of what we did was standardize our counting methodology. We standardized the equipment that we were using across the system so that it was easy to see that we were using the same procedures and policies park by park by park. We did some business enhancement planning and those kinds of things. So that was the first major category. Second category was improving effectiveness of management. We did several things here, several of them that this commission participated with us in terms of decision making. As you'll recall, we adopted a land transaction policy that required two presentations to the commission before we committed to a land transaction. We also committed to a very robust public transparent policy out there to make sure there was lots of opportunity for the public to comment. We developed enhanced budget monitoring processes at the local level, so each park developed its own business plan, and each park now operates under a business plan that has been vetted through the Administrative Resources Fiscal Control Shop as well as the leadership in state parks. And we also began, as you know, the updating of the land and water plan. The third major category of SAO requirements were relative to capital projects. Once again, you will remember that the commission was asked about a year ago now to endorse or to approve basically our criteria that we use to prioritize capital projects. And just as a reminder, those criteria are first and foremost health and safety. Obviously, if we've got a situation that could evolve into a health and safety issue, it becomes the top priority. We never let a health and safety issue linger. If we have an imminent health and safety issue, we close that facility and fix it now. But I'm talking about in terms of planning. If you have something like a roof that's leaking, it becomes a health and safety issue if you don't patch it up. The second criteria that you approved was regulatory, and I'm talking about ADA and other kinds of regulatory oversight, water quality and those kinds of things with our water systems. The third criteria is mission focus. In other words, we're going to put energy into those things that promote our mission. And last and certainly not least were the business focuses to increase potential revenue opportunities for the agency. So we've done a lot of things there. We did have a process in place that essentially had been in use for many years that ultimately became the process that you endorsed. So it was some validation of what we'd been doing prior to that. The last major category in terms of the 48 recommendations were fiscal controls, and to be honest with you, these were the issues that the legislature and honestly the executive office and state parks leadership had the most concern about. We did have problems out there. We did go out immediately and develop manual fiscal control processes. We did this in concert with the Administrative Resources Shop. It continues to be very labor-intensive. There's a lot of redundancy now in the system out there. There's a lot of separation of duties that was required. We are, as you're going to hear, beginning to have better compliance, very good compliance in the last couple of rounds with the audits that have been done. I don't want to steal Carlos's thunder there, but I do want you to know we're working very diligently with a group called InfoSpherics to put together an automated system that towards the end of this year we hope will come online and will allow us to discontinue some of these labor-intensive manual processes that pull a lot of folks off of the jobs they should really be doing in the parks and pulling them into the office to make sure that these manual fiscal controls get done appropriately. So I think there's light at the end of the tunnel for state parks in that regard. I think the system is something we're all looking forward to. We've had great cooperation from information technology, administrative resources, and state parks to get there. And with that, I will let you know that essentially all we have left with the state auditor's report are two items. One of them is called zero-based budgeting. We were asked to look at a zero-based budget process to inform us. We've done a survey of the entire country. There's only one other state that attempted to do a true ZBB, zero-based budget exercise. That was the state of Oregon. Excruciatingly detailed and ultimately not very effectual in terms of every year starting from zero and saying what would it take to run parks. So we are soon to be recommending to the executive office that we not go through a detailed ZBB, but that we use the information we have obtained through the analysis of these zero-based budget exercises to inform us as we move forward what are important elements in the development of a budget each year. The only other thing that's really remaining out there is the completion of our land and water plan, which I think all of you know we are moving forward on and will be completed with by December of this year. At that point, the only remaining requirements will be reporting, and we'll do that until we're told to stop. But for all practical purposes, we're through. With that, I'll turn this over to Mr. Contreras, and we thought then we would answer questions after he gets through, if that's okay with the commission.
Before I get started on my presentation, for the record, my name is Carlos Contreras. I'm the Director of Internal Audit. And a thank you to the Commission for the opportunity to provide an update. Now, prior to me starting the presentation on the FY09 audit plan, I wanted to talk a little bit about the last two rounds in FY08, round 7 and 8. Those were reported back in the January meeting. Now, in those two rounds, we took a look at 26 parks, of which 14 were compliant, a little over 50%, which was a drastic improvement from the earlier rounds in 08. One of the other improvements that we saw was a minimum of findings in the reporting and visitation area. And of those 26 parks that we looked at in the last two rounds of FY08, only one of them was in the most severe category. So a lot of the parks seem to be moving up to having less revenue findings, less critical findings. And with that, we can move into the 2009 audit plan. Now, in rounds 1 and 2, what we did is we went to 5 and 6 parks, but we issued just one report on that. Now, 4 of the 11 parks in these first two rounds were compliant. And the testing period for all of these parks was approximately a year after the fiscal control and procedures were set up. Now, when we look at those two rounds, we did identify that 7 of the parks needed fiscal control improvements. 3 needed to strengthen internal controls in their park store operations. And as you can see, only one park needed improvement in visitation, collecting, and reporting. We did have one park in those two rounds that was in the most severe category. And the information from each of these rounds is being provided to Scott and Walt for their use in managing their operations in the park. Now, round three, we went to 12 parks, and 10 of the parks were compliant for that period, and that was about a year after the test period was about a year after the completion of the fiscal control and reporting and visitation plan. Now, of those 10 parks that were compliant, 6 of them were in the high risk category. 3 were in the moderate category, and 1 was in the low, which is good, because what we're seeing is more of the parks that have the higher revenue, that take in the higher revenue, have the higher visitation, are becoming compliant. And we're talking about the Garners, Ray Roberts IDB, Cedar Hill, those parks of that size. Now, there was only 2 parks that needed any kind of really improvement in the fiscal controls. And you can see again in this slide that none of the parks were in the most severe category. So again, we're seeing quite an improvement. Round 4, within the next few days, you ought to be receiving that report, but I have some good news on that also. We went to five parks during that round. All of those were compliant. Again, three of the five parks were in the high-risk category, including Goose Island, Indian Lodge, and McKinney Falls. So
when
again,
you say, sorry to interrupt, well, you, high risk, you mean high visitation, high revenue?
High visitation and high revenue,
okay,
yes,
gotcha,
sir.
Gotcha, mm-hmm. Okay.
And so we've got three of those parks. Lost right. Maples and Martin Creek Lake were the other two parks in that round. For round five, again, this round looks good. I really can't mention anything because we're still in the process of doing the quality assurance review for that. But again, in speaking with the team leads, Cindy and Ed, they've informed me that there's a number of the parks that are going to be compliant there. And round six audits, we just got started here this month. So they're still in the field work training.
Good.
Additional audits that we've done, in February 25th, we distributed four reports that had to do with a lease concession. And they were at Lake Brownwood, two of them in Huntsville State Park, and at Longhorn Cavern State Park. Other audits that we've got going on are a sand and gravel audit, which is in reporting, and the cash handling at the law enforcement offices, which is in reporting. And those two reports ought to come out within the same time frame here in the next few days with a round four park audit. And we're doing a key performance measure review, and that's currently in the field work stage. One last thing. I guess through round four, and in the time frame from the beginning of FY08 through round four of FY09, what we're looking at least 43 of the individual parks have gotten a compliance rating, a compliant rating, which is about 54%. And there's actually one park that we've gone through twice, and both times, the last few times, have been compliant. But, you know, we're making great progress there at 54% when you consider that for the whole of FY08, we only had 24 parks that were compliant. So just in the last few rounds of FY08 and in the rounds that we've done in FY09, we've seen a tremendous increase in compliant parks, and especially those in the high-risk category. That concludes my update. Are there any questions for you, Mr. Bohr?
Any questions on this? Yes, sir.
What was the name of the lease operation where you and Scott were working on the renegotiation of the lease, where there had been some issues with the compliance with the lease agreement?
I think you're probably referencing, Commissioner, the marina lease at Eisenhower Lake State Park.
Has that never been audited?
We took a look at that. We had a request from the park superintendent and management to take a look at some of the information from there. We went ahead and did an analysis of their payments, and that information was provided to Randy Bell and Paul Kiesel, I believe is his last name.
Kiesel,
the park superintendent, and they were able to use that information in their negotiations.
Good.
Mr. Chairman, I think this is great news for us. I know when I got on the commission the summer of 07, this was really big news that was going on here at the department. And Carlos, I want to congratulate you for bringing us to this point, because it's really, really great news. And it comes at a very appropriate time now that our leadership is meeting in Austin.
Any other questions? I did want to recognize the people, because this is, and Walt Dabney will attest to it, and Scott, and of course Carlos coming aboard, is it, and I want to congratulate you three, but is it, you know, almost complete change in how we did everything. And then remember, you're asking these same people to run the parks and, you know, take care of the visitors and do everything else they were doing. And so it's been a real culture change. And most culture changes we know usually take 3 to 5 years. And these people, this group has really jumped aboard and cooperated and collaborated to get this done. And I just want to recognize a few people. Obviously, in the auditor's office, Cindy Hancock and Ed Best have been here quite a long time. Carlos came aboard. But they kind of carried the ball until Carlos got in from the leadership point of view and did a great job. Brent Leisure, as regional director with State Parks Region 5, has kind of been Walt's right-hand man in this thing. And then Larry Seek, am I pronouncing that right?
Yes.
I think I am. Kevin Good, Jeannie Munoz, Randy Bell, and Kim Dudish are all various people in the parks that have been very, very focused on this aspect of the of what we're trying to accomplish there relative to the legislative requirements. And as we get through it and work through it, and I'm like you, Scott, I hope we're at the end of it in the sense of getting this process established, figured out, hopefully get this system in place that gets the labor intensity of this has been a big part of the problem. So hopefully we can get it automated at some level, and then we'll be on track. But I want to thank all of you because obviously the legislature, in its wisdom, gave us the monies, and the citizens of the state voted for these bonds to allow us to do things we want to do in the parks. We're certainly working on keeping that momentum going, but this was part of the requirement, and that's the way the regs and the laws and the rules work, and I appreciate you all's collaboration and cooperation. So it's been great.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to take just a minute to thank all those people in the field that rarely get thanks for this.
Absolutely.
I will tell you that we logged 75,000 man hours in Austin in pursuit of this successful completion.
Yeah.
But that's only a fraction of the real hours that were put into this project by the people out in the field who were struggling to make this thing work. We obviously can't thank all of them, but rarely do they get thanked enough for what they've done.
Well, thank them for me. And anytime I'm out in the park, I do thank them because I know, all of the double checking and, it was just so labor intensive. And so, in one way, and we were all worried about it. It had the potential to take away from our basic mission in the parks, which is take care of our visitors, take care of our parks. But it didn't. And everybody doubled up on their work and their workloads, and we succeeded and been very successful. So, well, please pass that out and congratulations to everybody.
Great.
Yeah. Now, the one thing I'm worried about this additional audit is this cash handling at law enforcement. I'm worried about that. So, Colonel, we'll be watching that one. Thank you. Thank you, Carlos and Scott. I guess I'm talking to myself here. Mr. Chairman, this committee has completed its work.